Haranaf Tzadites Amid Beis, and we're about to start a new Mishnah, Emir Hashem, the second Mishnah of the three Mishnayos on the page. And this Mishnah is going to address the issue of what we call Dlias Mayim Min HaBar. And we're trying to draw water from a cistern, from some sort of a bar. The bar is in Rishus HaRabim, and he wants to draw the water into his house through a window, and he is in Rishus HaYochid. We're going to have the reverse case as well, which is called Shfichas Mayim, which means Mayim Shofchim are wastewaters, and in this case he's holding on to a pail of wastewater. He's inside his own private domain in Rishus HaYochid, and he wants to pour it out into Rishus HaRab. So the Mishnah says the following. Bar b'Rishus HaRabim v'chulyoso gavoa asorat tfachim. Now there's going to be a whole discussion here in the sugya about this addendum of chulyoso gavoa asorat tfachim. The bar itself is inside Rishus HaRabim. And the only way that we could permit drawing water from the bar into a Rishus HaYochid is if we convert the bar, transform it into a Rishus HaYochid. But that shouldn't seem to be an insurmountable problem, because if your bar is 10 tefachim deep, and assuming it's 4 tefachim wide, that's called a tail, and it has the status of Rishus HaYochid. However, the Mishnah says it's not enough that the bar is 10 tefachim deep. On top of it, we need a chulya. Chulya means that when you dig a bar, the dirt that you dig up is placed around the bar, and it adds height above ground level. So we need two things in order to be matir, drawing water from a bar b'Rishus HaRabim into his house in Rishus HaYochid. We need, number one, that you have a bar that's deep. But number two, you need a gova, you need also above ground level, a chulya that's 10 tefachim high. And then if you have both conditions, then the Mishnah says, Chalon shal gabov, he's allowed, if he has a window on top of this bar, a window in his house, is memalim heimenu b'shabbos. He's allowed to draw water from this bar with a pail on Shabbos, drawing it from a bar that's in Rishus HaRabim into his own house, which is Rishus HaYochid. And of course, we're going to have to figure out why he's allowed to do so. After all, assuming there is a space between the bar and his chalon and his window, and that space is clearly part of Rishus HaRabim, at least up to 10 tefachim, he's taking something from a Rishus HaYochid, meaning from the bar, into a Rishus HaYochid, into his house, through a Rishus HaRabim. And that is a Malacha d'oraisa. So we're going to have to see, how do we obviate the problem of the distance between the bar and the chalon? Because that distance creates a tremendous problem insofar as it becomes the airspace of Rishus HaRabim. So we have two problems that we have to focus on in the Reisha of the Mishnah, and that's going to be the Sugyas HaGemara. Question number one is, why do we need the chulya on the outskirt, the lip of the bar, that creates a mound that's above ground? Why isn't it enough just to have a bar that's subterranean and has 10 tefachim in depth? Question number two, how do we circumvent the problem of the airspace between the bar and the Rishus HaYochid and his chalon? Because presumably that airspace is Rishus HaRabim. And if that be the case, he's taking it from Rishus HaYochid to another Rishus HaYochid through Rishus HaRabim. Now we get to the Sefer of the Mishnah. Ashpa. There is what we call a garbage dump, and it's located in Rishus HaRabim. It's Gavah Asar Tfachim. It's got to be 10 Tfachim high. And Chalon Shal Gabov Shofchim L'socha Mayim B'Shabbos. He could take his Mayim Shofchim, his wastewater. He could throw it, chuck it out of his window on Shabbos directly onto the Ashpa. And once again, we have to make a couple of premises. Some are crystal clear, others are a little bit confusing to us. One is that this Ashpa has A, the Gova, the height of 10 Tfachim, B, it has to have a width of 4 Tfachim, therefore C, it becomes Rishus HaYochid, and when he pours his water out of his window onto this dumping ground, he's taking the water from Rishus HaYochid and placing it down in Rishus HaYochid, and that we can understand is Mutter. But now we're left with two questions. Question number one, what about the airspace between the dumping ground, the Ashpa, and the Chalon and the window of his house? Presumably, that should be a Rishus HaRabim. So he's actually throwing his wastewater through a Rishus HaRabim, landing, as it were, in the Ashpa and Rishus HaYochid. Once again, the problem is obvious. He's taking it from a Rishus HaYochid through a Rishus HaRabim into another Rishus HaYochid. That should be prohibited. And yet the Mishnah permits it. The Rashba and other Rishonim say that the reason why our Tana mentions Mayim, which is an interesting question, it could have been just any rubbish that he's throwing through his window, is because Mayim is unique. It's absorbed in the Ashba. And therefore, it's not going to go beyond the Ashba. If it rolls beyond the Ashba, for example, if he were to throw a physical object, a material object, out of his window into this Ashpa, the fear is that it would roll into Rishus HaRabim. It would not land in the Ashpa and establish a permanent Hanukha in the Ashpa, which again wouldn't bother us because the Ashpa is Rishus HaYochid. It would roll or bounce off the garbage, off the rubbish on the top, and land on a Rishus HaRabim. But in the case of Mayim, we don't have any worries. The water is going to get absorbed right down directly into the rubbish. Now we have another question to ask. Forget about the airspace between the window and the rubbish and the Ashpa. Let's ask another question. The Ashpa is something that's very temporary. At least in a contemporary context, you would say that the garbage collectors are going to come around once a week, whatever it is, and they're going to collect the Ashpa. Now you're getting a person trained into throwing rubbish, or throwing water in this case, out of his window into the Ashpa. And I'll tell you the truth. Even if you'll tell me, well, he certainly is not going to throw it when the garbage collectors clear out the Ashpa, because that would be, a $200 fine for loitering, for dirtying Rishus HaRabim. I said loitering, but that's not the right word. But I have to ask you a different question. It's going to take a while until the rubbish fills up once again on the second round. After the collectors remove the rubbish, people are going to start gradually bringing rubbish. It's not yet 10 Tfachim high. Last week on Shabbos, you allowed him to throw out his water, his wastewater, into this Ashpa. He's going to do it today as well. Will he pay attention to the fact that the Ashpa is now less than 10 Tfachim high? In which case, it's part of the Rishus HaRabim. And then he's going to violate a Moloch of Hotzah. So these are some of the questions that we have to ask on our mission. The Gemara asks the following question. We start with Bar Rishus HaRabim. Vichul Yoso Gavah Asar Tfachim. And the Mishnah establishes that Chalon Shal Gava Mimala Meimenu B'Shabbos B'mayas Kinon. What's the case? Ilema B'smucha. If you're going to tell me that this bar and its chulia are close, are in close proximity, to his house, to the wall, the outside wall, the facade of his house, and it's less than 4 tefachim, if that be the case, then we don't need the chulya. This comes back to our question about the chulya. The bar itself, presumably, is 10 tefachim deep. That makes it into a rishus hayachid. So forget about the chulya. I don't need to add gova, a height on top of the bar, ground level and up. All I need to know is that this bar, although it has no chulya, it has no height above ground, but it has a depth of 10 tefachim below ground, then what he's doing is, he's taking his water, right? He takes his pail, and he draws water from the bar. The bar is a Rishus HaYochid because it has the dimensions of 10 tefachim in depth and 4 tefachim in width. And he's going to draw his water and he's going to take it into his Rishus HaYochid. Forget about the Chulya. He's going from one Rishus HaYochid to another Rishus HaYochid. But again, you have to assume it's Smucha. And since it's Smucha, it's less than Arba Amos, then airspace of a public domain that's less than 4 tefachim, that's less than 4 amos wide, is considered, it's less than 4 tefachim wide, that's called a makom ptur. Our issue, when there's a distance between the bar and his chalon and his bias, is only going to be when there's a distance of 4 tefachim. Once you have 4 tefachim, then you have Rishus HaRabim. This is the airspace of Rishus HaRabim. That's going to create an Iser of Rishus HaYoch, Rishus HaYoch, Derech Rishus HaRabim. But if Smucha means that the bar is in close proximity to his bias, and it's less than 4 tefachim, that area between the bar and his house, which is less than 4 tefachim, is called a makom ptur. And now we understand that he's allowed to take the water from the bar, draw it into his Rishus HaYochid, derech makom ptur. What we're stuck with is, why the chulya? Why do we need a height above ground, around the chulya, of 10 tefachim? And here we have a machlokas between Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan, two different ways of interpreting our Mishnah. Om Rav Huna chavai askinan b'mufleges min hakosel arba. The bar is distanced from his house, from his window, by more than 4 tefachim, which means that the airspace between the bar and his chalon is a Rishus HaRabim. So now, we have a serious problem, which the Mishnah is going to solve. How can we allow him to draw water from the bar, based on the fact that the bar is Rishus HaYochid, into his Chalon, into his Rishus HaYochid, Derech Rishus HaRabim? Because if it's Mufleges, Arba, Mufleges min hakosel arba, and that makes it a Rishus HaRabim in the middle. And the answer is the chulya. Here's where the chulya plays the crucial element. Taima de'ika chulya sara. What happens is that on top of the bar, surrounding the Sfas HaBar, there's a chulya of afa that's 10 tefachim in height. The only way he could draw his water from the bar into his bias, into his chalon, is by lifting the water above 10 tefachim. Above 10 tefachim, that's already a makom ptur. Rishus HaRabim only goes up 10 tefachim high. So on the one hand, the bad news is that in between the bar and his house, there's 4 tefachim, which means that airspace is Rishus HaRabim. That's the bad news. How can he be allowed to draw the water from the bar into his bias? The good news is that there's a chulya that is built up on top of the bar, which guarantees that when he lifts up the water from the bar, he's going to be carrying it over the chulia, which is 10 tefachim above the ground, such that now the airspace of 4 tefachim plus that separates the bar from his house is above 10 tefachim. There's no way that he can carry the water lower than 10 tefachim. And since Rosh Hashanah Rabbah only goes up to 10 tefachim, above 10 tefachim it's called a makom ptur, and therefore he's allowed to pick up the dli, this pail with water in it, lift it above 10 tefachim, start from Rosh Hashanah Yochid, take it into his house, which is another Rosh Hashanah Yochid. But hol leka chulya sara, if on the other hand there's no chulya that's 10 tefachim high, that means that kamitaltele mishusayoch l'shusaram derech l'shusaram, he's going to be carrying the water from a Rosh Hashanah Yochid. The bar is 10 tefachim deep. That makes it a Rosh Hashanah Yochid, assuming it's 4 tefachim wide. And he's going to carry it directly into his window within 10 tefachim of the ground. And that's a Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, because the airspace above the ground of Rosh Hashanah Rabbah goes up to 10 tefachim. So now he's carrying it from Rosh Hashanah Yochid to Rosh Hashanah Yochid, Derech Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. And that's considered a violation of Maleches Hotzah. So the only way the Mishnah can allow you, in a case where there's 4 tefachim, to draw the water from the bar into his house, is if there's a gova above ground level, a chulio that's 10 tefachim high, making that 4 tefachim distance of airspace into a makom ptur. So Lamaskana, according to Rav Huna, we have two scenarios in which you'd be allowed to draw water from the bar through his window into his Rosh Hashanah Yochid. Scenario number one would be if it's smucha. Smucha means that the bar is within 4 tefachim of a distance from the kosel of his house, from the chalon, which means that the airspace now is a makom ptur because it's less than 4 tefachim wide. And number two, even in a case where there's 4 tefachim plus of a distance between the bar and his house, will allow him to carry it through that airspace because he's got a chulya. And the chulya guarantees that he will have to lift up the dli, carry it over the chulya, into an airspace of Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, that's lamala me'asar tefachim, which is called a makom ptur. That's Rav Huna. Now we get to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, there's no need to interpret the Mishnah and justify chulya the way Rav Huna did because of a distance of 4 tefachim between the bar and the kosel. Afilu tema bismucha, I would tell you that we still need chulya, even in a case where there's less than 4 tefachim of a distance between the bar and the kosel. And Hakam Mashmalon, the Mishnah is addressing a whole different issue. And the reason why we need chulya, and the Mishnah is coming to be mechadish me something about chulya, has nothing to do with that discussion whatsoever. But rather, Kamashmalon de bar v'chulyasim it's tarfim lasara. What happens if you have a bar that is 5 tefachim deep? Obviously, it's not a rishus hayochid. However, you organize a chulya of 5 tefachim in height around the Sfas HaBar. Our Mishnah is talking about just that case and addressing the following issue. Can we integrate the above ground height with the below ground depth? Integrating the 5 tefachim above ground of a chulya with the 5 tefachim of omek of subterranean depth of the bar. And the Mishnah is saying yes, that even though this bar in and of itself without the chulya would not be a Rosh Hashanah Yochid, it doesn't have the depth of 10 tefachim, nevertheless it becomes a Rosh Hashanah Yochid because of the chulya, which means that we'll calculate the depth of the bar from the bottom of the bar all the way up to the top of the bar. And what's the top of the bar? The top of the bar is no longer the ground level, but rather the top of the bar is the top of the chulia. And that's the way Rabbi Yochanan interprets this Mishnah. Now, my suggestion is, and you're free to disagree with me, that there's no machlokas ledina between Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan. All of the principles that are included or that underlie this Mishnah, whether you accept Rav Huna's interpretation of the Mishnah or that of Rav Yochanan, are identical, are universally acceptable. There's no nafkamina lemaisa between Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan. The issue is, what is the Mishnah addressing and what is the Mishnah coming to be machadish? According to Rav Huna, the Mishnah is coming to be machadish that despite the distance of four tfachim between the bar and the kosel, nevertheless, this is mutter to draw water from the bar into the house. And the reason for that is because the chulia guarantees that he's carrying the dli above 10 tfachim and he's taking it from Rishus HaYoch to Rishus HaYoch Derech Mokum Ptur. All of those principles are universally accepted. No one debates them or dissents. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan is saying the Mishnah is coming up with a different principle. And that is that we could be mitzarev the chulia together with the depth of the bar in order to create a Rishus HaYoch of 10 tfachim. And Rav Huna doesn't disagree with that at all. Now we go on to the Sefer. And the Mishnah here is talking about throwing water out of your house into the ashpa, into the dumping ground, through your window. And the Mishnah says, ashpa b'rishus ha-rabim gavas or tfachim. If you have ashpa, and this dumping ground has reached the height of 10 tfachim, so that when he throws his water out of his window into the ashpa, he's going from Rishus HaYochid into Rishus HaYochid. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Even if I guarantee you that it's going through a Makom Ptur, for example, it's less than 4 tfachim in distance, or alternatively, if it's above 10 tfachim, and now we can guarantee that it's above 10 tfachim, and here, certainly Rav Huna is correct, because keep in mind, the ashpa is 10 tfachim high, and it makes sense, therefore, that his chalon is also, in this case, 10 tfachim high minimum. So he's throwing it into the ashpa, above 10 tfachim, that's a makom ptur. So it goes from Rishus HaYochid and is absorbed in the Ashpa in Rishus HaYochid. The Ashpa itself is Rishus HaYochid because it is 10 tfachim high, 4 tfachim wide, and it's going Derech Makom Ptur. That's fine. But the Gemara is worried about a Derabbanan, about a Gzera. V'lo Chai Shinan, as a rhetorical question, Shema Tinotel Ashpa. How do you know that this man is walking around with a measuring meter, you know, and he's measuring the ground all the way up to the top of the ashpa, and he's guaranteeing you that there's 10 tfachim in height? And what if tinot el ashpa, as we said before, the rubbish collectors come along, and now there's a very small pile of rubbish, and anything below 10 tfachim, assuming it has the width of 4 tfachim, has a din of a carmelis. And if, on the other hand, they took away the entire rubbish bin, and basically what you have is just, you know, a little bit of rubbish on ground level, then you have a bona fide Rishus HaRabim, and by throwing his water out from Rishus HaYochid through the Chalon into this Ashpa after it was taken away, Nitla, he is violating a Malach of Hotzah Doraisa because the ground level is Rishus HaRabim. So if I want to grant you the better deal, I would say it's a carmelis because he has at least some ashpa that's between 3 tfachim from the ground and 10 tfachim height. In the worst case scenario, it's quite possible that the ashpa has been reduced to less than 3 tfachim from the ground, which means ka'ara smichta domi, we apply the principle of lavud, and now the ashpa has the status of Rishus HaRabim itself, and he's going to violate a doraisa. Are you not afraid that if you allow him on one particular Shabbos to throw out his wastewater from his house, from his window, into the Ashpa, that he's not going to do it on the next Shabbos, when the Ashpa is not 10 Tvachim high? Who's guaranteeing you that the Ashpa is always 10 Tvachim high? V'omar Ravin Bar Ada Omar Rebbe. Okay, so now we're going to learn about a dialogue that took place between Ravin Bar Abba in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak and Rebbe Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And in the context of this discussion, it's going to become absolutely clear that the halacha is very nervous, there's nervin, as the Israelis call it, about the possibility that the Ashpa was taken away. Maisa b'mavui echad. There's a story here about a mavui. Now, a mavui, by definition, means that there are two chatzeros, right? There are two courtyards that spill into a common alleyway. We'll call it an alleyway. That's a mavui. And in order to be matir tiltal in a mavui, we need the following conditions. Number one, we have to have a minimum of three mechitzos. That's called a mavui sasur. So it's got to be closed on three sides. And in this particular case that was brought in front of Rebbe, there's the facade of the buildings that spill into a chatzer, which in turn spills into a mavui. So this mavui is surrounded by one mechitza. Fine. If you go through this mavui, you end up in Rishus HaRabim. So that there's no mechitza straight ahead. So we need another two mechitzas. What are these other two mechitzas? One of them is Ashpa. And they actually piled up the Ashpa as a dumping ground straight along the outer boundary of the mavui. So when you walk out of your chatzer, from your bayis to the chatzer to the mavui, on your right side, if you turn to your right, you're going to see an entire line of rubbish. In front of you, you're going to see an open space that leads you to Rishus HaRabim. What's on your left? So on your left, you have a yam. You have an ocean. So where's the mechitza? I need a mechitza on my left. So far I have the mechitza of the two chatzeros, meaning the batim that lead into these chatzeros. I got the mechitza on one side, on my right side we'll call it, of Ashpa. And on my left side I have a yam. Is a yam a mechitza? To create a Rishus HaYochid? I don't see any mechitzas over here. A yam might be a karmelis, because it's very similar to Rishus HaRabim, but it certainly is not a mechitza. So here's we have to add another variable into the equation. And that is, that in order to protect ground level from inundation of the yam, they lifted up the mavui above the level of the yam. So that if you would, let's say, leave your chatzer into the mavui and turn to the left, when you walk towards the yam, when you get to the end, the outer lip of the mavui on your left, that boundary line, there's a 10 tfachim drop towards the yam. And the way mechitzos work, which is the magic of mechitzos, which if they'd ever asked me to change the name of Masechta Erevin, I'd call it Masechta Mechitzos. The magic of Mechitzos is that you can have an imaginary Mechitza, which you and I don't see with our naked eye, and in this case it's formed and created by the distance between the ground level of the Mavui and the top surface level of the ocean. And if there's a 10 tefachim drop between the mavui and the yam, that creates a mechitza. And now we have to fulfill the very last condition to allow tiltal from the chatzer into the mavui, and that is a lechi or a korah. In this case, it's going to be unlikely that he's going to create a Korah, although it is theoretically possible. More likely he could create a Tzuras HaPesach, but instead he puts up a Lechi. Now, a Lechi is always placed, is always located in the entranceway into the Mavui from the Rosh Hashanah. So as we said, when you walk out of these Chatzeros into the Mavui, what you're looking at straight ahead of you is an open area that leads into a Rosh Hashanah. At the entrance from Rosh Hashanah into the Mavui, you're going to have to put a Lechi. And the Lechi has to be structured very close to one side, either of the two sides. That Lechi creates an enclosure, and again, a kind of an imaginary Mechitza, so that the Mavui is now surrounded by four Mechitzas. So what was the issue of this Mavui? And why did the question come in front of Rebbe whether we would allow carrying from the Chatzeros into the Mavui? Tzido echad kol yom, v'tzido echad kol ashpa, one side of the Mavui, whether it's the right side, left side, irrelevant, ends in the yam. And again, the distance between the Mavui and the yam itself, at that, what we call in Hebrew, Sfat HaYam, is a depth of 10 tfachim, that creates a mechitza. On the other side, whether it be the right side, left side is irrelevant, there's Ashpa, and this Ashpa, this dumping ground, is piled up 10 tfachim high. So he's got now three mechitzos. Uba Maisa Lifnei Rebbe. And the question came in front of Rebbe, can we be Matir Tiltul from the house into the Mavui by setting up a Lechi or a Korah at the entranceway from Rosh Hasharabim into that open fourth side into the Mavui? V'lo Omar Bolo Isur V'lo Het. Rebbe hesitated to answer the question. Now, sometimes when a posek hesitates, it means he doesn't know the answer. That's not accurate in this case. Rebbe knew that the answer was that, according to the strict letter of the law, you're allowed to carry from the Chatzeros into the Mavui, if you set up a Lechi, because the Mavui is surrounded by three Mechitzos, one of which is the Ashpa, the other is the Yam. But nevertheless, he did not give a hora leheter because he was afraid of something. Something was bothering him. Not mi'ikar adin, not according to the strict letter of the law. And the Gemara explains why. Heter lo amar bo, why was he inhibited to just simply outright lenient allow them to carry from the Chatzeros into the Mavui? The Chayshinon Shemati Notel HaAshpa. Number one, the Mechitza on the, we'll call it the right side, just flip a coin, but on the right side is not reliable because they're going to clear away the rubbish at some point. Or at least there's such a possibility. Once they clear away the rubbish, obviously the Mechitza is Batel Mavuto. The other possibility that he was worried about is even on the left side, which we said was the distance between the yam, right, the surface level of the ocean, and the ground level of the Mavi, which was 10 tfachim, is yala hayam sirton. He was afraid that the yam brings all sorts of, I'm sure there's a word for it in English, but I don't know what the word is. Like things that drift on the ocean, you know, different logs of wood, or perhaps, you know, on the bottom, they cemented the ground of the ocean in order to create this distance from the ocean up to the Mavui, or perhaps the cement of the Mavui might fall down, and the waves start pushing all of this stuff. We'll call it all this drifting stuff. In Hebrew, it's called tit v'refesh. And all this stuff might get impacted against the angle that, so to speak, that mechitza that separates the ground level from the ocean. And then, I no longer have a mechitza, because a mechitza means it's got to be vertical from the bottom up to the top 10 tefachim. Now, he's got all sorts of stuff that's impacted on this mechitza, and there's no point in which he has 10 tefachim from the top of this accumulation of driftwood till the top and the ground level of the mavu. On the other hand, Isur lo amar ba. Rebbe was not willing to say you're not allowed to carry. It's an absolute no-no, because there are kaimim mechitzas. Right now, if you look at the situation as it exists, as it prevails currently, there are three mechitzas. The ashpa is 10 tefachim high. The madron, that, you know, that incline from the mavi down to the yam, is 10 tefachim. And it's a mavi shena mefulosh, and he's got a lechi. It's really mut. In any event, what do we get from this whole story? The ma'aseh b'mavi echad. We see that Rebbe was very concerned about the possibility of shema yinotel ha'ashpa, meaning ashpa is a very fine mechitza, but it's not such a great mechitza. Right now, it's a fine mechitza. You know, it says by Yishmael that God judged him by Sheruv Sham, and that's why God saved Yishmael. But future Yishmael went off. Anyway, but whatever it is, by Sheruv Sham, this Ashba is a very fine mechitza. It's 10 tefachim high. But Rebbe is afraid that the situation would change. People would continue to carry from the Chatzeros out into the Mavui without paying attention to the fact that the mechitza on the right side, we'll call it, namely the Ashba, is no longer 10 tefachim high. Because nitla ashpa, and you don't have a mechitza. If that be the case, then we really don't understand our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah says, ashpa b'rishus harab gavah sara tefachim. The man is standing in his house, and he's throwing water out of his window, and it's landing in the ashpa. And it's going from Rishus HaYachid into Rishus HaYachid. And the Mishnah allows it. Why shouldn't the Mishnah be afraid? Shemi Yinotel HaAshpa, just like Rebbe was afraid of Shemi Yinotel HaAshpa. Gemara says, Lo Kasha HaDiYachid HaDiRabi. There are two categories of Ashpa. This private Ashpa. I have my own dumping grounds in my backyard. That's where I keep my Ashpa. Nothing is provided by the municipality. And in that being the case, then if at some point the ashpa was reduced or perhaps removed, I'm not going to pay attention. No one's going to remind me. In contrast, we have the ashpa derabin. This is a public dumping ground. Everybody is using this ashpa. And if you decide to use the ashpa after the ashpa was taken away, the entire community is going to jump on you, yell and scream, and say, wait a minute, there's no longer an ashpa over here. And we have no chashash that he'll forget about it. However, I want to add one other point. And that is the permanent nature of the ashpa. Imagine, Rabosai, if you have your own private backyard dumping ground. After a while, the accumulation of rubbish, I'm not going to go into details to describe it, you know, only the poets could describe it. You're going to definitely want to clear it out. But in case of an ashpa derabim, you know what? It's very infrequent. Nobody's really bothered by the ashpa. You know, it's located in a public area. No one also has that sense of responsibility placed on his shoulders that every so often he's going to have to clean out the ashpa. Again, this reality is very different than contemporary reality. You know, what we're used to is all sorts of stuff that goes into ashpa. Again, that might change, by the way, because of the new laws. Like, for example, as you know, I spent 2 years in Canada. They're very strict about what you're allowed to put into the dumping grounds. I mean, there's, you know, if you have food that, you know, remnants of food, for example, what's the word for it? Can anybody help me with that word?
Compost,
right, compost, sorry. It's been a decade. And if you have compost, then you have to put it in a special tzfardea, as we call it, you know, one of these green pails, and that they collect very frequently. But the rest of the rubbish, you know, might be different kinds of kalim that you threw out that are made of wood or made of metals or whatnot. And in that case, it might sit there for a long, long time. And therefore, Rebbe, when he was very concerned about the ashpa, because maybe they'll continue carrying from the chatzeros out into the mavli, even after the ashpa was taken away, he was addressing the case of a ashpa diyachid. And an ashpa diyachid is going to be taken away on a very frequent level. No one's going to want to leave the ashpa there and, you know, until it, you know, it, the whole mavli is just sunk, you know, below ground level in ashpa. In the case of a mavi derabim, it's something that that again might be true in contemporary society as the attitude towards garbage collecting changes, but certainly back in the time of the Talmud, no one felt that responsibility of cleaning up the ashpa, and therefore the ashpa was reliable as a mechitza long term, and our Mishnah therefore allows him to throw the wastewater from his chalon into the ashpa, which is gavah asar tefachim, and we assume it's always going to remain asar tefachim. So that's a different perspective than the one I offered before, that people will remind him, don't, you know, they'll put a public sign here, don't throw your wastewater out of the homes, out of the windows, into the ashpa, because the collectors have already removed the ashpa. And now we get to the third mission on this Amud. Ilan Shayamesich Al Ha'aretz. So now we're talking about a whole different issue. And that is the question of a Karpaf. So I believe that in the past we've discussed the Karpaf. I'll just mention, just to remind ourselves of what a Karpaf is all about. A Karpaf is a situation which the Rabbanan prohibited Tiltul for the following two conditions, if the following two conditions are met. Number one, the Karpaf is a very large area. And although the Karpaf is surrounded by mechitzos on all sides, the Rabbanan said it loses its status as a Rishus HaYachid because it's so large. So imagine, I think I mentioned to you in the past, and Steve, you'll surely remember it, that I gave the example of a golf course. A golf course is a very large area, and it's got fences all around it. It's a Karpaf. Why? So the first condition here, it doesn't look like a Rishus HaYachid because it's so huge. The area is so large. We'll see exactly what the shear is of a Karpaf. But once it goes beyond that shear, then it's fulfilled one condition. And that's the largeness of the area makes it similar to Rishus HaRab. The second condition is what's called, and this, Rabosi, you just have to memorize this. There's no shortcuts. Lo hukaf lidira. The mechitzas were not set up for the goal, for the purpose of creating privacy for those who are inside. But rather, the mechitzas are there for protection from the outside. So if there are any situations where we don't want something from the outside to come in, that's called lo hukaf lidira. If it's got A plus B, it's very, very large, meaning it's more than what's called a beis ha'sayim. Beis ha'sayim is a field where you could plant two saws worth of chitin. And that's a major amount of grains. So you have this area, it's approximately 5,000 amos square. It's very large. And it's lo hukaf lidira. the purpose of mechitzos in classic mechitzos, which is called hukaf l'dira, is to create a residential area. I want to live in the privacy of an area that's enclosed. I don't want to be, I want to improve my residence. But if the mechitzos were created not to improve residence, in fact, no one's even living in this large area. He may be planting vegetables or fruits in this area, but he sets up mechitzos around his fruit garden or his vegetable garden simply to keep out strangers or to keep out, animals that might come in and destroy his vegetable patch. That's called a karpaf if it's more than a beis asayim, shelo hukaf l'dira. And I say this by introduction to the following case. Now you have to be a little imaginative, but you have an ilan, you have a tree, and it's a humongous tree. It's got foliage that stretches in all directions and eventually folds down towards the ground. Now let's assume that foliage comes, let's take an extreme case, it goes all the way down to the ground. It touches the ground. Now the area inside this foliage is surrounded by mechitzos. And the Chiddush of our Mishnah is that the branches of the tree will form mechitzos. If the area between one branch and the other is filled in by leaves and by foliage, then you have mechitzos. Again, the problem is going to be that if it's a very, very large area, it might be even more than a beis asayim, then you have the karpaf problem because it's lo hukaf l'dira. So let's read the Mishnah inside. Ilan shahaya mesich. Mesich means that the branches form like schach. They cover a wide area, large area. And on all sides around the tree, this foliage with its branches reaches very, very close to the ground. And now we have sort of like an empty space inside the foliage. It's almost like the foliage here has created a tent. And you enter into that area, you are completely surrounded by the branches of the tree, and that's called mechitzos. Im ein nofo gavoh min arat shlosha tefachim. If the distance between the foliage and the ground is less than three tefachim, which means we could apply the principle of lavud, and kisasum dami, it's as if the branches reach the ground themselves, is metaltal and taktav. You're allowed to carry within. Now imagine, this gigantic tree is located in a Rosh Hashanah. How can you carry more than, again, you might be able to carry on a Daraisa level less than four amos, but the Mishnah is saying you can carry from one end to the other end. What's more than four amos? And the answer is because it's a Rosh Hashanah. Where is Rosh Hashanah? Where are the mechitzos? And the answer is the branches of the tree are considered mechitzos. Then the Mishnah goes on to qualify and says, wait a minute. Supposing the roots of the tree, like let's look for a moment at the trunk of the tree, and there are all sorts of shoots that come out of the trunk of the tree. And I want to sit on top of one of those roots. Let's say it was cut on top, like Yad Kennedy, and this place to sit on top of it. Says the Mishnah, Shroshav Gvoh Min Arat Shlosha Tefachim Lo Yeshev Aleihem. If these extensions of the trunk of the tree, of the roots of the tree, climb above three tefachim from the ground, then he's not allowed to sit on these trunks. And in order to appreciate this, we need another introduction, and that's the Mishnah at the end of Masechta Beitzah. And we've mentioned this on many occasions in the past. The Rabbanan made a gzera that you're not allowed to benefit from a tree, an ilan. So I might very well be allowed to sit on a car, on the outside of a car, an automobile on Shabbos, but I can't sit on a tree. And why is that? Because we're afraid, gzeira shemayala v'yitlosh, that if we allow him to benefit from a tree, he may be tempted to grab some fruit that's growing on the tree and it'll violate meleches ktsira. No benefit from a tree on Shabbos. Now, when these shoots are sittable, how low are they? If they're on ground level, which means up to 3 tefachim, then that's considered like sitting on the ground. You're not sitting on a tree. Once these roots grow 3 tefachim plus, then they themselves get the status of an ilan, of a tree, and you're not allowed to sit on it. You're not allowed to benefit. Lo yeshev aleh. So people mistakenly think you're not allowed to climb on a tree. The truth of the matter is you're not allowed to sit on a tree, even if you're not climbing on the tree. And that's the heck, if that's the scope of the gzera at the end of Masechta Beitzah. You're not allowed to benefit from a tree, you're not allowed to climb a tree, you're not allowed to sit on a tree, as we see here in our Mishnah, unless it's below 3 tefachim. Now, what's interesting is the Gemara is going to have scenarios where you have offshoots from the roots of the tree that go up and then go down. At some point, they rise above 3 tefachim, and you certainly would not be allowed to sit on that branch above 3 tefachim. But then the branch turns downwards, it bends downwards, and it's below 3 tefachim. And that's going to be an entire debate, a sugya in the Gemara, whether you could sit on those branches that are below 3 tefachim, but they are extensions of branches that went above 3 tefachim. Amar Rav Huna b'Rei de Rav Yeshua, ein metaltelin bo yeser mi beis asayim. If the foliage of the tree extends to an area that's larger than a beis asayim, then you're not allowed to carry within it. The Mishnah stipulates that you're allowed to carry as long as the foliage reaches below 3 tefachim from the ground level. Comes along Rav Huna and he says, no, we have to restrict this heter. You're not allowed to enjoy the benefit of the halal, the airspace inside this foliage, as we called it, the tent, if it's larger than a beis asayim. Why? Because once that area is larger than a beis asayim, it has the status of a karpaf, and the rabbanan said you're not allowed to carry in a karpaf. So the Gemara says, my taima. I don't understand. Even if it's larger than an area of beis asayim, we have a second condition that has to be fulfilled in order to activate the din, the isa derabban of tiltul in a karpaf, and that is it has to be lo hukaf lidira. But why is this lo hukaf lidira? If he wants to enjoy the benefit of the airspace that's surrounded by this foliage on all four sides, why not consider that hukaf lidira? So the Gemara answers, and here we turn to Daf Kuf Amud Aleph. Mishum Davi Dira Shetashmisha La'avir. Let's try to see if we can figure out what the Gemara means by Dira Shetashmisha La'avir. Who would set up their residence around the foliage of the tree? These were what we call Shomrei Hasados Vapardes. We'll call it the security guards. And what they would do is, they were in charge of marching back and forth around a private orchard or a vegetable patch or a field. And they were hired as, if I could use the term, security guards, so to speak. And it could be that thieves would come by and they might penetrate into my orchard and steal my payrolls, my grains, whatever it is. It could be, again, there might be animals and so forth and so on. So I need these watchmen, these shomrim. Now, the shomrim would have to guard not only during the daylight hours, but also during the nighttime hours. Maybe it's even more important during the nighttime hours. So maybe they had rotations and shifting. But those who were in charge of this Shmirah, they would need some sort of protection, place where they can rest their bones at night and be protected. So that the foliage of the tree that now surrounds the tree on all sides, that reaches below 10 tefachim, it's mamish on ground level and serves now as mechitzos. What are those mechitzos? Are they mechitzos lidiur? Shall we assume that these are mechitzos that are protecting the shomrim? And that would give them the bona fide status of hukaf lidira? And it wouldn't make any difference how large of an area it is. It would always be an area that's with shesayachid, with a head to tilt from one corner to the other, based on those mechitzos. Or is it lo hukaf lidira? What do you mean, lo hukaf lidira? Why is it lo hukaf lidira? The shomrim are living in that airspace, covered and protected, as it were, by these mechitzas, by these branches of the tree that surround them on all sides. So the Gemara comes up with a breakthrough definition, and that is li'avir. Why is this called tashmisha li'avir? And the answer is because the shomrim are not really living inside this area, this halal, that's surrounded by the nof, by the foliage of the Elon. They really didn't set up residence. That's only like a temporary help to make it feasible for them to get a nice place to rest their bones and not be, you know, not suffer from the hot sun during the daytime hours or from various elements in the nighttime. But it's really for the avir. Avir here refers to the area outside the mechitzos. So inside the mechitzos, we have what's called hukaf lidira. Outside the mechitzos, we have tashmisha liavir. You and I would have said that if the shomrim are sleeping and resting their bones inside this nof, then that's called hukaf lidira. Rav Huna says, no, that's not called hukaf lidira. That is called tashmisha liavir. And if it's tashmisha liavir, says Rav Huna, if it has the other condition, namely it's more than a beis asayim, then it becomes a beis asayim plus, meaning beis asayim and larger. It's got to be a little larger than a beis asayim. And it's lo hukaf lidira because it's tashmisha liavir. And therefore, ein metaltalin ba yeser mi beis asayim. If yeser beis asayim means if the area enclosed by this nof, again, it's a gigantic tree, is more than a beis asayim, then it has a loch of a karpaf. And the reason for that is because it's not considered hukaf lidira, but rather it's tashmisha la'avi. So let me add a footnote here to this concept of what we call Dira Shatashmisha Lavir, based on a brisa that we had earlier in Masecht Erevin on Daf Chof Beis. Klal Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Kol Avir Shatashmisha Ladira Kugon Dir Vesar Mukse Vechatzer is Afilu Beis Chameshes Kurim U Beis Aseres Kurim Mutar. So that's the case of Tashmisha Ladira. And the Chiddush here of Rav Shimon ben Elazar is that it's called Tashmisha Ladira even in cases of corrals for animals and so forth and so on. But, says Rav Shimon, Kol Dira Shetashmisha Lavir Kigon Burganin Shebesados is Beis Asayim Mutar Yesemi Beis Asayim Osur Kevon shedira zu eino asuya litzarch atzma lodur besocha kiim litzarcha avir hachitzoni ein ze nechshav ki hekev gomor lidira. So this is not really where he wants to set up his residence.
Ela al karcho hu darshan. He has no choice. She eino tzarech lo. He only needs this dira to sleep in that area that's surrounded by mechitzas. Ela lahagein mipnei achama, to protect him from the sun. Velo es hadiurim ba. But it's not a mechitza that was set up to facilitate and service the dira, the residence of those who are living inside. V'chol makom shelo hukaf l'diras adam echmiru ba chachamim kishu gadol yosef mibeis asayim lios nidon kikarmelis. Okay then, so that's what we have here. And we're up to the two dots, three lines down on Kuf Amud Aleph, Mirz Hashem. We'll pick that up tomorrow.